Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of the English, not the English Cup, I've done it again, the Naked Englishman. The English couple is a video channel, of course. It's raining here. I think it's the 11th today and it's coming up to 7 o'clock in the morning, the 11th of September 2025. Another wet, miserable day, but not as downpour that we had yesterday, which was quite copious. Just going to have a look in my shed. Briefly. Oh, I'm dropping water onto the microphone and leaping back into the house. Yes, another wet day out there, just been washing up. Fortunately went to bed a little bit later than normal, and we ate a bit later than normal, and so the food things didn't get washed up, which is something I like to do before I go to bed. So that when I come downstairs, I haven't got to do the washing up. But today, luckily, full of energy and able to do it, which is grand. Just going to come sit down on the sofa in here and talk to you. At least I'm sure it's the 11th. I've got a video, which I didn't do a video yesterday. I was waiting for something. And instead, I have a video today, which... will be about my, well, it'll be about people showing any interest in the book, because I'm going to put the order in, and if people want to have a copy of my book, which they may only be a small number of people who could be bothered to have a copy of my book, because with various truth bombs and answers to the solutions, perhaps, possibly, maybe, it's a fictional work, but I think the solutions are true. This is what I believe, and it's what I've been practicing one way or another, and many of the things are actually working, so perhaps people would be interested, I don't know. But there are so many offers out there. Anyway, people can show an interest in the book of getting a copy, because there'll be a limited edition, because it won't be on Amazon. So so I'll talk about that on the video today, which will probably be out by 10 o'clock, something like that. Yes, we've been working very hard on getting it right, and I dare say there'll be mistakes, not just spelling mistakes and grammar mistakes, but things I've left off in the acknowledgements, and people I've missed out by mistake and not on purpose, and all those sort of things. I was lying in bed this morning thinking about the film we watched the other night, The Time Machine. And it's a strange concept, isn't it, time? Because, of course, there is only one time. Time doesn't really exist in the way that we think it does, because there's only now. The only time available to us is now. It is a constant now. And there is no other, you know, we think about the future, but the future never actually comes. The now is what there always is. We feel like the future has come because we measure things, don't we, with dates and times and things, a clock and what have you. But actually the future never really comes, because we're always now, which is a very hard concept, I think, for many people to grasp. Anyway, the thing I wanted to mention, really, and talk about was this business in the time machine. If you've seen the film or read the book, the time traveller, he calls his mates round, and he demonstrates a small version of his machine, and he sends it off in time. And in the film, it disappears. And they say, why can't we see it? He said, because it's gone off into the future. And you can see the logic of that, that yes, you'd think that because it's travelling, it's travelled into the future, therefore it's been here, now it's gone on. But of course, that, in the way I think, is wrong. That's not how it could possibly work. And this is why I think you can't travel in time, because time is only now. Whatever has been, has been. And whatever will be, has also been, because it's also, everything is now. So if you have a little machine and you put it on the table and you say, right, I'm going to send that into the future, every moment that arrives, as we know now, is the constant. So it's a bit like a playhead on a tape recorder. You know, if you imagine the future is the spool, the big spool, full of tape that is going to be going past the playhead on the tape recorder, and the past is the spool that will take up all the tape from the other spool. But it will all pass the playhead, and the playhead is the moment now. Well, you wouldn't really be able to send something into the future, because in the film what they've done is he's kind of sent this little time machine, the miniature time machine, into the big spool that has yet to happen. But if you did that, it's not over the playhead, which is the only observable thing that, you know, is the moment now. So my argument would be, quite simply, that it wouldn't disappear. It would always be on this time machine was on a table in the chap's living room. It would always be on that table. And even though it's travelling in time, apparently, it would still be on that table and they'd be able to see it. And they would be able to, you know, if you moved the table, the time machine would move with it, because anything that happened to that thing would interrupt its travel, because it had to be at every time there was. So the only way you could send it through time, really, and have it not move or be interrupted, is if it was in an isolated room. But it's travelling through time, even though it says, oh, we're going to travel through time faster than anybody else, like, you know, into the spool of the future. But it couldn't really, because it has to be there whenever you know. So, in other words, when tomorrow comes, not that tomorrow ever does come, of course, but when the perceived version of tomorrow comes, it would still be there. It wouldn't disappear. Which means that the time traveller could not travel any faster than now. He could not get into the future in his machine, because it couldn't go faster than now, because now isn't a speed. Do you see what I mean? And I think that's a strange concept to grasp, because the future doesn't exist. You cannot travel into the future and come back, because it's already, you know, if anything, everything has already happened. You can't travel linearly, I suppose, is what I'm trying to... But people will argue with me and say, well, you could do it in a different way. And maybe you can. Maybe you can jump sideways. But the present is always present. And so if you're sitting in a time machine, it always has to be there, doesn't it? Because even though if it's going into the... Now, if it went into the past, I could understand it disappeared. I could understand that it would vanish from the table, or from the machine that you get in would vanish from the room, because it's gone before it existed, or before the moment. That I could get my head round. But for something to go into the future, because the future is supposedly yet to happen, that machine would still be there, which would also mean that for the present, the future's present, the future's moment of now, if there ever was such a thing, it would mean that somebody could just push you off and get on the machine. But to them, it wouldn't appear that it was doing anything, because it couldn't travel faster than the unfolding of now. That's what I'm trying to get at. So, in other words, the upshot of all of this is we're all travelling through time, because we're travelling at the fastest rate that there ever is, which is now. Have I just bent your heads? I bent mine. And I need to blow my hooter. So yes, that was kind of troubling me when in that film, I was watching it, and I was thinking, well, it shouldn't disappear. It would only disappear if it was going backwards. But then could it go backwards? Let's not get into that argument. It's all too much. Well, I ordered something yesterday and it didn't come. Bloody post, not post, these delivery services, they're just irritating, aren't they? You can't rely, nothing's reliable anymore. In the old days, you know, things, people were, your reputation held by on your service levels, didn't it? But now, it doesn't seem that that makes much difference. You can order things, it doesn't turn up, there'll be feeble excuses, oh, it's a bit busy, there was this. Nobody goes the extra mile, do they, on these companies? People just turn up. It's only a job, it's not a passion. And in a way, unless, of course, you're perhaps higher up in the firm, and much of this depends on you earning stack of fortune, so you'll stay in the office a bit longer because you know that if you complete the deed, the deal, you'll make £20,000 more than if you just went home that afternoon or things like that. But most people don't, do they? I remember a friend I had who, you know, he would not. He worked for the railways, and he said, "Well, when it comes to the end, I'm not being paid. I'm only being paid for a certain amount of time." Time again. There we go. And he said, "You know, they'd say, oh, would you mind working 15 minutes more?" And we'd go, oh, "I'm not sure about that. That's 15 minutes." You know, and people would get a bit uppity, and they said, "Well, I want extra pay for that." No one's got any loyalty, mind you. In his situation, he was quite right because, you know, they wouldn't let him go earlier. You know, if he could say, well, yeah, you know, if it was give and take. I remember when I worked for a printing company when I left school. It was a small company, and they very often said, "Oh, Richard, do you mind working a bit late?" There was no extra money or anything. It was part of keeping the company afloat. It was about, well, not brutal survival. But it was, you know, this. You weren't really working for hours. You were working because you believed in the job. You enjoyed the job, and you were trying to help the customers get whatever it was they wanted printed. And this was for the Parish Magazine. So there was, you know. Now, what they could have done is just said, "Look, here's an extra fiver or something." Slipped it into my hand. But what they did actually do, funnily enough, and I didn't question it, I just said, "Yeah, no, I'm happy to help out, of course. Why wouldn't you?" What was I going to do? Go home? I was living at home at the time, and just watch the telly and what have you, and leave them on their own to try and bring out the bloody Parish Magazine, which brought them in. You know, it was a regular job. They didn't want to lose it because it kept the company going. So of course, happy to help. But then one day they took me down to a camera shop and he said, "Show me the camera that you wanted to buy," which was about 30 quid, which back in the 1970s was quite a lot of money, 30 quid. I think it was a week's wages. And he said to the bloke, "Could we have a look at it?" So, you know, this is my boss. And we looked at the camera. He said, "Oh, it's a nice camera." He says, "How much is a roll of film?" And he got a roll of film down and he had a look at it and he said, "Well, I'll buy that." And I thought, what's going on? Are you taking up photography or something? And he said, "No, that's because you came in and you worked and they bought me this camera, because I unquestionably went in and helped out and, you know, all of this." That's loyalty, isn't it? They didn't just give you a bit of extra money. He knew I wanted a camera and they just bought it. I was over the moon. Taught me an amazing lesson. An amazing lesson of royalty and appreciation. Appreciating somebody who's done something for you for no gain, you know, just to help and keep what you had going, i.e. the business was going. And everybody had come in, you know, all hands to the pump. Really, to get this bloody magazine out, collating it, stapling it, boxing it, all this sort of stuff, printing it. I think it was St. Mary's Magazine, St. Mary's of Horsham Parish Magazine. I can't remember how many, it was like 2,000 copies collated into 12 pages of rubbish, you know, whatever was in it. But had to be done, had to meet the deadline. And it was always late. I think it was always late coming in from them with their artwork or with their text and stuff that had to be then made into camera plates and printed on the paper and, you know, in whatever colours, and then collated and stapled and packaged up. And I remember there were these rubber things you put on your fingers, and you would have these piles of 12 piles, whatever it was, and the stack of 2,000 of these, and three or four of us would go around in a circle, picking up each 12 pages, one, two, three, four, such and such, and then go one, and then go around to the beginning, two, and we would put them on in piles, alternate piles, you know, alternate ways round. So one facing sort of north, and then one facing north south rather, and one facing east west, and so that you could see them. And then those piles were taken over to the stapling machine, in which you pick them up, each copy, and squared them up in your hands, dump, dump, and then put them through the stapler. Bang, bang. Oh my God, it was, that stapler was 2,000 staples times two, because there were two staples in it. It gave you such a splitting headache. But back in those days, that's how you did it. There wasn't the internet, and it was all printed on A4. It was very basic. You think now it would be quite primitive, but there it was. It was primitive. But anyway, there you go. That was loyalty for you. These firms now, there's no going the extra mile. But then I can't blame the people, because the companies treat people like crap, don't they? They just treat them. It's a shame. That's why I'm very much in favour of small businesses, small family-run businesses, individuals operating their own little business or bartering or whatever. Once you get to a certain size, and corporations particularly, it loses all sense of the human element, and it becomes, you know, a corporation is by definition a dead entity, corpse, you know, and it has lost its humanity, and we've lost humanity in all these things, in the utilities particularly. Of course, the government has lost its humanity, and of course it's a corporation registered on Dun & Bradstreet. All these sort of things, all the different offices are on Companies House. The whole thing has become a cop in business and commerce, and we've lost that sense of trust, sense of loyalty, sense that anybody is really doing anything for anybody else other than trying to make the most amount of money and cutting all corners, and you know, the humanity side of it is gone. Well, that's not a world I want to live in. There are smaller companies, of course, that still cherish their customers. They don't have to worry about bloody shareholders. I think shareholders are the scum of the earth, personally. People who've got money, who think, oh, I can make more money by investing in a company, and then they have to be serviced, don't they? And I think they're the scum of the earth. They are the magpies, you know, that kick out other people's work, because they just want to make money without doing anything. They don't want to put any effort or sweat in. I don't have any shares. I don't believe in that system. I think it's corrupt. I think it's awful. I think shareholders are the scum of the earth. Said that three times. That's because I do. I dare say there are people listening here who are shareholders, who will have arguments. Well, if I didn't invest in this company, the company wouldn't exist, blah, blah, blah. And that may be true. And the only way that I see that shareholders really can hold their head up high is if a company says, right, we need some shareholders. They allocate shares, and perhaps the, you know, shares are open to all. But whoever invests in that company, the shareholders thing should only be for a very set time, and then once it's done, it's done. So if the company needs to raise, say, £100,000, it floats the shares, £100,000 come in, and over, let's say, 5 years, if there's a profit, their shareholders get their profit. But after that 5 years, those shares dissolve. So it's they can't just, you know, they can buy and sell within that 5 years if they wish to and try and make some money. Okay, I would allow that. But after 5 years, if the company hasn't made that £100,000 to pay off the shareholders, tough titty. Tough titty. Their shareholders also should be the last to be serviced. The customers and the employees should be the first. So if the company starts making a profit, it's usually because the workforce is working hard and the customers should be rewarded by either lower prices or better service. The employees should be given a pay rise and better conditions because they're making the company successful. And the people at the top should be the third to get any bonuses or what have you. And the shareholders should be the last because they should not be the ones that everything is done to make sure the shareholders are happy. That, you know, because they're the ones who've already got money, they're investing in it, they've decided on their risk if they wanted to, and if they make money from it, great. And if they don't, they don't. That's their problem. They didn't have to invest in it, but they should not be serviced. And that would be the only way, I think, then that shareholders can hold their head up high. But otherwise, you've got money and you're trying to make money from because you're privileged to have money. I think they're the scum of the earth. I think they leech other people's sweat and tears to try and keep a company going. I'm sorry, but that's what I think. I don't think that's very laudable, and people should be ashamed, really. You know, if you want to make money, invent something, do something, create your own business, see how hard it is. Or easy. I'm not saying it's necessarily hard, but give it a go. But to just because you've got a spare £1,000 or £100,000 or a million, why should you have the advantage over anybody else and suddenly reap thousands or millions? It just seems a very unfair system, and I don't like it. I'm not saying that everything should be fair, because the world isn't fair. Of course it's not fair. Some people are taller than others. Some people have more arms or eyes than others. Some people are born with more money in the family that they're born into than others. Of course it's not a fair system. Some people are born more beautiful or uglier than others. Some people, just their biology means they're going to have something wrong with them, a defect, better or worse than others. Life is, at the end of the day, an opportunity, and you do what you can with it. So it's not a fair world, and I wouldn't want it to be a fair world, because that would be very boring, would it not? And there would be no excitement and no... You know, if you could never achieve something. But I think where you can make things as fair as possible, one should. And if somebody's got some advantage over others, people are always going to have some advantage over others. But to make money because you happen to be rich, I think, and unless you're making money for other people, and it's the benefit, you know, it's those people who just sort of, well, I can make money on this firm over here. You make your money and then you disappear without, say, some of your profit going to the people that's just helped you make that money. If the people who've helped you make that money because you just happen to have money get nothing out of it, that's almost as much as stealing in my book. Anyway, I'm waffling on about this, that and the other. I've got things to do. The website, the video rather today, is the one to watch out for if you want a copy of my book, because I don't know whether there will be enough people interested. I have really no idea. Perhaps there won't be any interest. Perhaps there'll be like 10 people who, out of charity, will want to buy a copy of my book. I don't know. I have no idea whether people will really want it or not. You know, what have I got to say at the end of the day? But I hope people do, because I think there is some answers in there. And because it's about a town that doesn't comply, I think that actually, if one town did do what goes on in Biggleswick, we have a chance to get out of this tyranny that we're in. But that's only my thoughts. I may be wrong. What do I know at the end of the day? Anyway, have a lovely day. Look after yourselves and keep smiling.